Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Welcome to a Negro night here at Washington. Or as Fox News will report, two thugs disrupt elegant dinner in D.C. Nice to be here, though, at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Or as you know, they're going to call it next year, Donald Trump presents a luxurious evening paid for by Mexico. But I have to say, it's great. It looks like you're really enjoying your last year of the presidency. Saw you hanging out with NBA players like Steph Curry, Golden State Warriors. That was cool, yeah. You know, it kind of makes sense, too, because both of you like raining down bombs on people from long distances, right? Sure. What? Am I wrong? What?
Welcome to the Savage Nation. Isn't it nice to see the presidency elevated to such a high level? Isn't it nice to watch the elite of America and the world, for that matter, as we well know, the media is smarter than everybody, sitting there preening with themselves, not knowing whether to laugh or not, seeing the women with their jaws tightened so their teeth don't show, their eyes glinting left to right to see whether to laugh or not? Isn't it nice to see how stupid the media class really is? Isn't it nice to finally see the faces that have destroyed the United States of America and perhaps the entire world? Oh, welcome to Monday on the Savage Nation. I was watching the Correspondents' Dinner over the weekend. I think the comedian was the high point. I think he did a great job because he was to the left of Obama, and boy, did he bomb Obama. He embarrassed the president. Did you notice that he didn't even attack the president once? Not one joke touched on Obama's eight-year presidency. Not one poke at the president. Instead, Larry Wilmore from Comedy Central, of all places, poked at the media itself. And the media didn't like it very much, did they? They didn't know what to do. He singled out all of the jerks who I single out every day, like the Wolf Blitzers of the world, the Morning Joe people, whoever they are. It was sickening. And we'll have some of those bites. But you know, at the end of it, when I saw the faces of the... Well, I said, how can I put it? You can't call them evil, but they are. You know that ignorance, controlled ignorance, is evil? You know that looking away from pure evil is evil itself? Do you know that a nation like this being dragged into the communist left because of the media, who will not point it out, either they don't see it or they don't know what's happening, that's pure evil? Orson Welles did a great movie years ago called A Touch of Evil. Well, there was more than a touch of evil in that audience at the Correspondents' Dinner. Now, you may say, oh, just sour grape, Savage, you weren't invited. Yes, I was. Oh, I was invited by a couple of groups. They would have been glad to have me at their tables. I didn't go. I've been invited year after year. I don't go to such events. I couldn't believe the faces of the people, though. When you actually saw the... I want to thank C-SPAN for giving America and the world a look at the stupidest people in the world. You saw the faces of the people who run the media? Did you see what they actually looked like? Well, I guess most of you don't watch C-SPAN or you didn't watch the replay. But after watching that and then watching the mobs of Mexicans assaulting Americans who love their country at the Trump rally, seeing the hatred of the Mexican gangbanger chicks with tattoos on their necks and rings in their noses screaming, get out of our country, watching the hatred and violence of the Mexicans at the Trump rally, watching the hatred and the violence of Black Lives Matter on college campuses, demanding that the colleges pull their standards down to their level, I couldn't take it anymore. So I went back and forth watching the Correspondents' Dinner. And as I said, saw the stupidest faces in America. I saw the actual faces of idiocy. A bunch of sheeple looking at each other to see what to laugh at and what not to laugh at. The women with the clenched jaws to not show their teeth. Idiots not knowing what to laugh at. What was really amazing was that they had no idea where they were or what they were doing. I couldn't take it anymore. So I went to my library and watched this jump cut. Watch this jump cut. Here it comes. Watch this jump cut. Here it comes. Can you cross the chasm with me? Are you ready to cross the chasm with Michael Savage? Because we're not going to Donald Trump and we're not going to Ted Cruz. We're not going Republican Democrat. You're going to have to make a big leap with me. I turn to a book in my library, and it's a book of pictures of Frank Lloyd Wright's architecture. And I saw houses and buildings and apartment towers that were 500 years ahead of their time. Frank Lloyd Wright, do you know who he is? Oh, I know he's a white man, and I guess he's supposed to be in the dustbin of history. You see, but we need visionaries, I said to myself. There was a man 500 years ahead of his time. The buildings that Frank Lloyd Wright designed will live for 500 years. Now tell me, what will live for 500 years in today's America? Tell me where the visionaries are. Who are they? What are they creating? Where is the elegance of their creation? That is today's topic. That's right. Where do you turn for inspiration? Where are the visionaries of today? Now, at the same time that you're thinking about that, I want to read you what Theodore Roosevelt had to say on immigrants. He was ahead of his time. In 1907, he said this. You know Theodore Roosevelt, that great American president, that populist of his time, the man who busted the trusts. He was sort of a Bernie Sanders, but he was an American who loved America. He wasn't dragging us into communism. He was dragging us into Americanism. Teddy Roosevelt, war hero. In the first place, he said we should insist that if the immigrant who comes here in good faith becomes an American and assimilates himself to us, he shall be treated on an exact equality with everyone else. For it is an outrage to discriminate against any such man because of creed or birthplace or origin. But this is predicated upon the person's becoming in every facet an American and nothing but an American. There can be no divided allegiance here. Any man who says he is an American, but something else also, isn't an American at all. We have room for but one flag, the American flag. We have room for but one language here, and that is the English language. And we have room for but one sole loyalty, and that is the loyalty to the American people. That is Theodore Roosevelt, 1907, and I see Mexicans burning American flags, spitting on American flags, beating up Americans who love their country at Trump rallies. And I see the vermin, excuse me, the worms in the media glorifying these gangbangers, these retrogrades, glorifying Black Lives Matter, who offer nothing to this society other than hatred and division, funded by George Soros, a man who should be picked up by Interpol and arrested as a war criminal, in my opinion. And by the way, well, don't get me started on George Soros, please. The name is becoming more commonly known as we go along in this year. The silent hand that destroys the West. He said, by the way, that Donald Trump is the worst danger to the world. Do you know why George Soros fears Donald Trump? Because George Soros will be hunted down like a mad dog if Donald Trump becomes president for what he has done to various and sundry world currencies and what he has done to the social stability of many European nations and to this nation itself. When a man takes his billions and uses it to fund thugs who burn and loot and crush police cars and beat people up for expressing their opinion, what is he, a criminal or a social justice warrior? I'll leave it to you. Oh, by the way, while you're thinking about it, before you turn that dial, because this is too rough for a Monday, your president who sat there during the correspondence dinner, not one word touched him, sat there preening. And Michelle Obama, I know we're not supposed to say anything about first ladies. She sat there like a queen. Not one word hurled at her about her abuse of power, her abuse of the office, her extraordinary expenses, her traveling with her mother-in-law, a mother, her traveling on a second Air Force One to go on a vacation under the guise of official business. And she sits there like she's some goddess, some great person above it all. And there was Obama sitting there preening, enjoying every moment of it except when it touched him, the bombs raining down, etc., from the comedian. And then I asked myself, why didn't one correspondent show the courage to scream out, "You're a liar, Mr. President!" like I wanted to yell out. "You've destroyed the Middle East, Mr. President! And you, First Lady, you've abused your power!" and be taken out of there. One correspondent scream out. But no one screamed out. I screamed inside my head. I read today that Obama is budgeting $17,613 for every new illegal minor, more than Social Security retirees get. Listen carefully, all you oldsters. Your president, your criminal communist president, who is seeding America with its destruction, is budgeting $17,000 for every new illegal minor, more than Social Security retirees get. $17,000 for each of the estimated 75,000 Central American teens expected to illegally break into America this year. $2,841 more than the average annual Social Security retirement benefit, according to a new report. This is in the Washington Examiner by Paul Bedard. $1.3 billion in so-called benefits to unaccompanied children, more than double what the federal government spent in 2010. Now, why would President Obama, why would he bring in so many illegal alien children? What is he trying to do? Are they all going to be engineers? Every one of them is an Einstein? Every one of them is going to produce something that America needs? Every one of them is going to provide a service that America needs? No, I don't think so. It's to sow more social discord. It's to increase the voter rolls of the uneducated so they vote for government handouts, more government spending. That's what it is. You know that, and I know that. And it goes back to my statement of where are today's visionaries? Where are they? Obama gave a speech that night, bad, tepid jokes based on race, about black and white, again, playing on the black and white. And I said to myself, how does he get away with this? The answer is take a look at who's in the audience. He knew his audience. He knew these were not the sharpest pencils in the box. He knew that these were not 150-watt bulbs in a package. These were 20 to 40 watters sitting there in tuxedos and bad dresses from the newspapers and the TV shows. Oh, they make more money than me, some of them, I get that. But it doesn't make them better Americans. It doesn't make them smarter Americans. It doesn't make them Americans that I would be proud to be around. I ask you, where are today's visionaries? Obama continues to degrade America. And if you listen to what he said at that speech, I only have one or two pieces that are worth playing for emphasis sake, which I'll play when I come back. You will see what a degradation this man has brought to the presidency. Here is a man who had a chance to lift people up and bring them together. Instead, he has brought us down and driven us apart. I'm Michael Savage, and I believe in this monologue, and I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth with gold and silver. Call 800-BUYCO. Yeah, stop the coming civil war. That's an interesting topic unto itself. Whether you know it or not, you're in a civil war. Obama's had Mexicans, illegals, Guatemalans, El Salvadorans stampede over the border. Instead of wanting to become Americans, they want you to get out of your own country. Screaming, America stinks, you stole our land, we'll take it back. You should see the hatred. You won't see that on Wolf Blitzer's show, which is why I'm glad the comedian Larry Wilmore humiliated him. He deserves to be thrown off the air for what he's done. But you see, I said something on Friday that I want to read to you because it's in my newsletter. My friends, we are facing a civil war. It's a free newsletter. I'm not selling you anything. You go to michaelsavage.com. You click on it, and they send you basically show outtakes rewritten three times a week. And it was after Donald Trump was blocked by angry mobs in San Francisco and forced to hop a fence to reach a speaking engagement at the California Republican Convention last Friday. The mobs of white communists, Mexican haters, Palestinian haters, remind me of us. Trump was us. We're forced now to hide in our own country. We're forced to hop fences to get into our own venues. We're forced to speak with each other behind barbed wire fences because of the mobs that Obama has brought in and has unleashed on us. Well, let me tell you something I wrote. I'm a student of history. I know how this ends, and it doesn't end well for them, Savage said Friday. Savage continued. I'll go into the third person. Oh, I'm not worried for our side. I'd be very worried for their side because right now they're running wild in the streets like there's no one to oppose them. But I read reports of bikers for Trump, and I will tell you I see real problems on the horizon for these left-wing worms who think that no one's going to stand up to them. They've gotten away with murder. Here you have Mexicans waving Mexican flags in America saying, Trump die, Trump die. We want our rights. My friends, we are facing a civil war. And I wrote a book a year ago entitled Stop the Coming Civil War. People said to me, Savage, you should take the word stop out of it. I said, no, I want to put the word stop on it. I tried to stop the coming civil war. I tried to reason with the worms on the left. I tried to reason with the George Soros haters of America. And my reason got me nowhere. And now we face the reality of today. Donald Trump is a presidential candidate. Whether you love him or you hate him is irrelevant. What's relevant is that he be permitted to speak. Otherwise, we descend into the chaos of the dirty third world that none of us want to be dragged into. You heard me. Is that the world you want to live in, the world that they fled, the world that they ran from? That's the world you want them to bring here? Now you understand what the revolution is in America. You can see it clearly with your own eyes. I'm Michael Savage, and I believe in my monologue. 855-407-282, Jerry on KERN Radio, down near the Grapevine in Southern California. Jerry, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Dr. Savage. I've been afraid to call you since you've been on national radio. I'm tied in with the educational institution. I'm a retired educator, 63 years, and I just want to tell you, the more I hear you, the more you make sense, not only as a political analyst, but as a person. I ordered your Teddy book, and I just can't get enough of what you're saying right now.
I understand it's heartfelt, Jerry, and I thank you for calling the program. There's nothing more that I could add to that. I had a little satori about myself and my career, and I don't know exactly when to talk about it and how it fits, nor whether it fits here. I don't have the time to develop it in 56 seconds before the break. But I had a vision very recently about what's going on, because there's big changes coming in the media, in my show, in my mind, in my heart, in my soul for this program. I'll cut to the chase before I develop this. Remember on Friday I told you that my entire life was leading up to this year to be on the radio? Part of the revolution that's going on in this country is a revolution of nationalism. Donald Trump is the clear winner. He will win in a landslide unless Obama brings in millions of more of these mobsters to pervert the vote. I was put here to awaken America, the small number of Americans who will decide the next election. My whole 22 years in radio is leading up to this year. And I want to tell you more about that as the show unfolds today on the program, because it's important for you to hear it.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is an honor to be here at my last, and perhaps the last, White House Correspondents' Day. You all look great. The end of the Republic has never looked better. I do apologize. I know I was a little late tonight. I was running on CPT, which stands for Jokes That White People Should Not Make.
What a degradation. He had a chance to lift people up. He had a chance to raise up the dialogue to bring us together, and look what he's done. But he's so smooth that people confuse his glibness with goodness. Make a note of that. People confuse the president's glibness for goodness. I could do a few other mixtures, but I don't have the patience. Then he says in clip 7 something that, of course, is another big lie. Listen to 07. Listen to this.
In my final year, my approval ratings keep going up. The last time I was this high, I was trying to decide on my major. I haven't really done anything differently. So it's odd. Even my aides can't explain the rising poll numbers. What has changed? Nobody can figure it out.
Oh, I can figure it out. You want to ask me? Because I know what's going on. What do you mean you can't figure it out? It's simple. Your numbers are going up. Who's doing the polls? And who are they polling? I've never been polled in my whole life. I don't know one conservative who would answer a poll. If I get a call on my phone, my real phone, saying, listen, I'm going to do a government survey. I don't even say goodbye. I hang up. I don't know one conservative who's ever been polled. Now when you flood America with illegal aliens and you do the polls in two languages, you don't know why your poll numbers are up. Take a look at the faces in that audience. Take a look at those morons sitting at the White House correspondents' dinner. Then you'll know why your poll numbers are up. They're not up. They're artificially high, like the economy. You print money and wonder how the economy's doing well? Just keep printing money and keep giving it out. Everything looks good for a while till it crashes. Look, you want me to get into economics 101, I'll give it to you real simple. Simply, rather. But not right now. I got to go back to something introduced before. Where are the visionaries of today? Is Obama a visionary? He's the opposite. He has degraded America, not lifted us up. You know, that we once had a president who was an engineer. I think it was Herbert Hoover. I'll never forget reading that he had a master's degree in engineering and that his thesis was a design of the Brooklyn Bridge in New York City. I believe it could be, I think that's correct. Robert searched for it. I recall that. His master's degree was an engineering design for a bridge, the Brooklyn Bridge. I said, holy God, that's when a master's degree really mattered. So I was in graduate school at the time, and I said, well, you know what? I'm going to do the equivalent in my field. I'm going to make it matter. I'm going to do something that is elegant and is important in my field, and I did. And my master's degree at that time was published in its entirety by a journal of Harvard University, which meant a lot to me. It still means a lot. No one gets their master's degree published in a major journal. The entire master's degree in my field. Now, many of you are naysayers, and you'll try to put it down and say, oh, he got a degree in herbs and roots. Well, that's an example of the ignorance of the average mocker out there that don't even understand what we're talking about. But what I'm getting at is something different. Here is a president who's actually never done anything his entire life, let alone not design a bridge. Has he ever done anything in his life that's worthy of anything? No. Now, look, I could spend the whole show bellyaching about Obama, and it's boring. That's not what I'm doing here. I'm trying to show you that he did this in front of the entire press corps, and no one jeered him. No one booed him. No one even shouted out once, you're a fraud, and risked being taken out of that dinner. Then there were guys there who knew who he was. He sat there preening on the approval again, like he was God Almighty, and he could do no wrong. And so he continues to do wrong over and over and over again. That's why I have to praise Larry Wilmore. I never heard of him. I think he's brilliant. I think he's a great comedian. And he's to the left of Obama, which is why the media didn't like him. He was to the left of Obama, and he ridiculed the media, not the president, which was quite unusual. But the point is that the president degraded the conversation. Here was a chance to lift people up, and he talks about, the last time I was this high was when I was trying to decide on my major. That's quite kind of pathetic when we have such a drug epidemic in America, isn't it? Do you want a president telling children that it's okay to get high and you'll still wind up as president? What does that say about the presidency itself? Anyway, these are some of the random thoughts, and I've gone in a few different directions, but let me kind of point it for you. There's a Cuban filmmaker, Agustin Velasquez, who came from Cuba. He knows what communism is. And the Daily Caller has a clip, and clip 19, you must hear, all of you ignoramuses out there. Listen to 19.
Well, the left have been very clever, because they have given, very non-threatening words, like liberal. Liberals, you're supposed to believe in freedom, but liberals in America do not believe in freedom. They believe in government control. Progressive is a mixed up of socialist, communist, and fascist. And they do not believe in freedom either. They believe in it, all government controlling all aspects of life. But progressive is a positive sounding word, like liberal.
It's stunningly intelligent. Now, there is a man who is a national treasure. He's an immigrant. How many of the mobs of Mexicans who are putting fingers in the air and cursing Trump voters understand the word of what he just said? None. None. And he knows what's going on. How many times have I told you progressive is a mixture of socialist, communist, and fascist? Numerous times. It's as though I was speaking through him. WDRC in Connecticut. Gail, welcome to the program. What's on your mind, Gail?
Hi, Dr. Savage. I just wanted to let you know you are the true visionary of America. You are the words that you have woken me up. I've listened to you for over a year, and I've learned so much. But not, in your book where it says close the borders completely for 7 years, when they're open again, add an A and a B. Of course, the A is close the Mexican border, but the B is also close the northern borders, the Canadian boundary. And when we reopen them, enforce legal immigration after that.
That's correct. Do we need legal immigration? What for? Tell me what we need legal immigrants for.
Legal.
I love people I love all the people who are trying to parse words, say, well, no, I'm not against immigrants. I'm against illegal immigrants. So I say, okay, so you're for legal immigrants. What do you need them for? Tell me what they're bringing to the country. They're only degrading wages, for example, so that guys like Zuckerberg can make another $15 billion that week by driving wages down. I would say build trade schools and teach the people in America who don't have jobs in high schools to teach them how to do the jobs that guys like Facebook are hiring from India, from wherever he's hiring from, mainly from India. And the Indians are wonderful people, but, you know, I never desired to live in Calcutta. I had no desire to live in New Delhi. I kind of find it charming to go to restaurants, but I never wanted to live in New Delhi. I was at a club the other night. I got to tell you this. It's an interesting story. A university place. And there was a dinner for my alma mater, University of California at Berkeley, on another floor. And I looked in and there was not one white person in the whole room. Everybody was from India or Pakistan or somewhere else. You say, well, what's wrong with that? I don't know what's wrong with that. If you go to China and you see the University of Shanghai, would you see a room and you saw a room full of Caucasians, wouldn't you say that's rather odd? But you would never see that there. If you went to the University of Tokyo and it was a reunion dinner, for not a reunion dinner, but a dinner for the new students of the University of Tokyo, and you saw all people from America, would you find it odd? They wouldn't permit it, would they? Because they're concerned about their own people. Only here do we have Quislings who have sold the American people out and destroyed our future. You want visionary? I'll give you lightning bolts. Listen, this runs through my blood. I am an immigrant son, but I was told very clearly, if you're an American, then be an American. Learn English. I grew up in a non-English-speaking household from my grandmother. She didn't speak a word of English to me. I loved her very dearly. She spoke two other languages. She couldn't master the language. It's a complicated language. I had trouble with English when I entered Queens College. I was ashamed of my mangling of verbs and language, but I had a great speech teacher who said, you have a great voice, you have a great mind. And he said, don't worry about the few grammatical errors. Just learn to speak your mind. Are you still there, Gail?
I certainly am, and I agree wholeheartedly with you. But I agree that when people are allowed to immigrate here, that they should assimilate to our culture. And I am also.
Well, wasn't it supposed to be a melting pot? Weren't we told that America was a melting pot?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Obama's turned it into another kind of pot, but I can't say it on national radio.
I have to tell you,
it's certainly not a melting pot.
Grandmother came.
And as an immigrant son, I will tell you that the country that does not meld, divides and cracks. Let me send you a soft book, Teddy and Me, Confessions of a Service Human. It's coming out next week. And it's a book that was supposed to calm me down. I read today on the Drudge Report, there's an article that dogs' heartbeats are the same as their owner's heartbeats. I couldn't believe what I was looking at. I can't find the article now that I need it. I got stuck on it this morning. I tried not to. Sex addicts reveal rock bottom, descended into hell. No, that's not it. Anyway, it's about dogs' heartbeats and human heartbeats. And I said, God, is that ever true? In other words, we beat at different rates, obviously. The hearts beat faster than ours do, which is why they die younger. But the heart rate is the same. Here it is. Study. Dogs' hearts beat in sync with owners. Can you believe this? Dogs' hearts beat in sync with their owners, says latest study to show having a pet is good for keeping healthy. Australian researchers separated dogs from their owners for a new study. Then they reunited them and monitored their heart rates for patterns. Both dog and human heart rates fell and then began to mirror each other. Researchers were stunned by how much two heartbeats came together. Well, we all know that those of us who love our dogs. There's only one religion on earth that hates dogs, and only one culture on earth that eats dogs. I'll let you figure out what I'm saying. You talk about cultural integrity, you talk about cultural clashes, you talk about the clash of civilizations. A review of research by the American Heart Association suggested that pet owners have healthier hearts than other people, and dog owners in particular. Well, they say they go for walks, whatever the weather. It's not the walks. Anyone that has a dog, I've had a dog since I'm a little kid. I wrote about all of them in Teddy and Me. Some of them were rough, some were mean, some were Hell's Angel dogs, some were little fluff dogs like Teddy. I love Teddy the most. But the point is that where do we turn for love and inspiration in our lives at the end of the day? You know, what do you turn for? Where is your inspiration? I think I did a show like this once before. Where are today's visionaries, I asked earlier? The Frank Lloyd Wrights of today, where are they? When we have such a debased presidency and such a low-life media. We wouldn't hate the media if we didn't know who they were. When you see their faces at the cars, I want to thank C-SPAN, by the way, for finally doing us a service by panning to the audience of the Correspondents' Dinner and letting us see the actual faces of evil and stupidity. This is the Savage Nation. Be here.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust to protect my wealth. Call 800-BUY-CO. I am the antidote to Obama's America Last policy. I am Michael Savage, and this is the Savage Nation. And for 22 years, I've had a single message, borders, language, culture. I am the antidote to Obama's America Last policy. Let us all pray that he is the last stop on the train of progressivism, communism, socialism, whatever you want to call it. The riots in the streets, that have been fomented by the highest office in the land, this started, remember, it didn't start here. Began a long time ago when the police were attacked by that most evil of attorney generals who's now slipped back like a slithery eel into the law profession that he came from. Eric Holder turned the mobs on the police. He's been replaced by Loretta Lynch, who was encouraging the mobs by not prosecuting them, who is threatening the police by putting federal so-called oversight officers in every police department that she wants to federalize. The cops can't do their job. They'd love to do their job. But Obama has crippled them. Eric Holder, Obama, George Soros, all these left-wing front groups, they're crippling the police for one reason, which I pointed out in Government Zero, what the end game is, which is the federalization of our police forces. I want you to think about your local police force. I want you to think about whatever town you live in, there's a local sheriff or a local office, police department. Now, I want you to envision what would happen if they were all federales, like in Mexico, all run out of a central office, such as Homeland Security, run by a former Wall Street lawyer, Jay Johnson. Think about what that has done to America, having a DHS that never says the word radical Islam and only looks at Americans as the enemy. Think about what will happen if your local police become your enemy rather than your friend. Think about what will happen if the federales see you as the enemy. And now add to that picture of paranoia. You've been disarmed because the Second Amendment was taken away by Hillary Clinton through some trickery. So you have a disarmed population and a federal police force. What you have is an instant Cuba. Instant Cuba in a skirt. You have Fidel Castro in a dress. Her name is Hillary Clinton, which is why I predict, once again, that if there's a head-to-head Trump versus Clinton, he wins by a landslide. Latest poll by Rasmussen, Trump 41, Clinton 39. Trump does twice as well among Democrats as Clinton does among Republicans. And this is only an early poll. I said long ago that when it comes down to Trump versus Clinton, he would win by a landslide, 60-40, 59-41, something like that. No matter how many illegal aliens Obama tries to flood into this country, Trump will win by a landslide. But then the fun begins, because if you think he's going to be able to turn this huge ship around, you don't know much about navigation in turbulent waters. If Trump wins, and I think he will, there will be an economic crash. And the reason I say that is not because of his policies, but because of what Obama will do on the way out the door. Yellen will raise interest rates to 15%. He'll turn off the spigot. Wait until you see what happens in the last few months if Trump wins. Wait until you see what that nice guy in the White House does.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Blue Monday, I'm high here through Monday. Got to work, plan to sleep all deep. Here come Tuesday.
Well, we're not in Tuesday yet. We're still in Monday. Work like a slave all day. Those of us who work and provide the taxes so that the thugs in the street can protest and riot and go home to free things. You know, the America that Obama has created, the preening president of the Correspondents' Dinner, the man who, shall I say, comes from heaven itself. Well, this is hour number two. Hour number one, if it could be summarized, would be summarized in one question, which is, where are today's visionaries? They're certainly not to be seen in the political world. They're not to be seen at the Correspondents' Dinner. So where are the visionaries? And as I said, I didn't really develop it. I turned to my library and I pulled out a big picture book of Frank Lloyd Wright's architecture. Everyone knows who he is, except those waving the flags of hatred. And I looked at a man whose designs will live for 500 years. Here in the San Francisco area, across the bridge, Golden Gate Bridge, there's a town called, a county called Marin County. And people had the vision in the 1950s to hire Frank Lloyd Wright as the architect of the Marin County Civic Center. It's astonishing. And many people go in and out of every day in Marin County. They don't even know, you know, what it is. Some do, some don't. But you become immune to the beauty that you're in. Like everything else that's gorgeous and beautiful and extraordinary, after a while it becomes ordinary to you when you forget where you are and what you have, whether it be in a relationship with a person or with God himself. People think, yeah, it's there, you know. Well, it's the same with the beautiful buildings that he created. They're astonishing, going back to 1917, 1918. And I ask myself, where are the visionaries of today? Where do we turn for any inspiration? Many of us are starving for inspiration. So people turn to God. I don't know if they turn to artists anymore. I mean, music you're going to turn to, the music of today, that's music to you? Let me not go there because it's not music to me. So you turn backwards. Where do you turn for music? Where do you turn for art? You turn back a few hundred years. Or you turn back 50 years or 75 years to keep your brain in harmony. There's disharmony everywhere. Everywhere you turn, the music is disharmonious. The art is disharmonious. The buildings are disharmonious. The world is disharmonious. So people say, where should I turn? So the answer is wherever you turn. Dogs, cats, the sun, the moon, the stars, God. But I think of the Lord's Prayer. He leadeth me beside still waters. And you remember that prayer when you were a kid in high school, or rather elementary school? You know that in elementary school where I went, a public school in the Bronx, PS 48, we actually read the Lord's Prayer in the morning. We saluted the flag. We started the day by a pledge of allegiance to what? The United States of America. We all are little kids, our hearts thumping. We had to put our hand on our heart and swear allegiance to America. That went out the window, though, with Allen Ginsberg and Bella Abzug. It was considered somehow oppressive to make children swear a loyalty to America. And, of course, the professors confirmed that anyone who had to swear a loyalty oath to a country was a bad thing to do because they were all disloyal to America. Well, anyway, you know all of this, do you? Do you know all of this or not? How the country has devolved over the last number of years. It didn't start with Obama, but it sure might end with him. The Battle of Seattle, 2016. 9 arrested and 5 cops hurt in anti-capitalist protest. Can you imagine these spoiled vermin? Anti-capitalist protest. If you actually click on the article, which I linked on michaelsavage.com from the London Daily Mail, you'll see the faces of these so-called anarchists. Take a look at them. Who are they? And then we go back to the question of, where do we turn today for any vision? Where? Where are they? Who are they? What are they creating? Where is the elegance of their creation? Now, some of you may call and say, look, in Silicon Valley, you have some of the creative people of today who are creating things that will last hundreds of years. I wouldn't argue with that. But would you argue that the digital world is creating, let us say, an uplifting of the human spirit that will last 500 years? Think about what I just said. What in the digital world will bring mankind up for the next 500 years? Anyway, maybe this is too esoteric a topic for commercial radio. Maybe this is for a lecture hall or a postgraduate, you know, seminar. Not for the average guy in the street sweating and grunting to make a living. I get it. But I'm not going to revert to Ted versus Don. The Don versus Ted hour is not interesting to me. When it comes up, it'll be interesting to me. Another one tomorrow. Every day, another Don and Ted hour. It's over already. Everyone knows it but Ted. My dog knows it. Teddy knows it's over, but Ted doesn't know it's over. And the only reason Ted is still in it is for the money. How many times have I told you that? You know what kind of money is involved in this fundraising, and what that does for their fortunes in the future to keep their face in the public eye in terms of books and lectures and whatnot? It's all about greed. It's nothing about America. If ever you were questioning Ted Cruz, don't question any further, because any man who cared about America as much as he says he does would have retired, or rather, excuse me, stepped aside by now for the sake of the party and the sake of America. But that unto itself tells you that he's not qualified to be president, in my opinion. And it's one man's opinion. Everyone knows mathematically he can't win. He can only steal the nomination. He can't win it. The people don't like him. Now you had the strange pick, strange thing. Oh, God's hand. He did a rally somewhere with that wonderful choice. He loses five states and he appoints a vice president. No one in the world has ever done this. The man loses five states and the next day announces, here is my vice presidential pick. And out she comes, the business flop, Carly Fiorina. So she went on the road with him, and it's not funny in a way, but it is strange. She gives an introduction and falls off the stage. Did anyone see that? Oh, there it is. Carly falls off stage, top of the Drudge Report. Watch Carly Fiorina fall off stage in Indiana. Drops like Cruz in the polls. It's not funny, but I don't know what happened there. How does she fall off a stage? And what's with the school children? And what's with introducing Ted Cruz's children and wife before he steps out from behind the dark curtains? What kind of man uses his children like this at every rally? Little children. We're not talking about grown daughters who have businesses like Trump. We're talking about little children being used over and over again. Anyway, it's astounding, the world. That's inspiration to you. Not to me. Not inspiration to me. I'm looking for inspiration. Ted Cruz at the back of the bus trying to crazy glue her shoe back together. As somebody wrote, I think one of the kids may have pushed Carly. Must have something to do with her singing. Look at that. She's already starting to act like a VP, a Gerald Ford VP, but a VP. That's terrible. That's sarcastic. By the way, one question for all of you who love Carly Fiorina. How come she was never offered another position in a corporation? Anyone have any answers to that? She wrecked Hewlett-Packard? Whatever. I mean, it's crazy, the whole campaign. Let me take some callers for a moment. WABC in New York City. Kevin, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I'm 60 years old, and I remember growing up in Queens when I was a little guy, my father and me standing waiting for my uncle to come down in the VFW parade, and my father gets...
All right, Kevin, listen, this is my show, that's my shtick. What's your main point?
My point is...
I'm joking. I'm saying you're trying to do my show, but I'm not looking for a fill-in today. What's your main point?
My point is that I believe this whole thing that's coming about with the decline of America, with Donald Trump coming in now, and with your voice, I believe it's all part of manifest destiny.
I know what the... Okay, to you, what does manifest destiny mean? I know what it means to me. What does it mean to you?
It means the same way when Washington was in battle, how he was never wounded, how that freak storm came along when the British tried to burn down D.C., you know, things like that. I believe this was God's country at one time, but it kind of seems like it's gone under this dark shadow. But I think at this point in time, it's like a threshold, and I think you're part of it. And I mean that sincerely.
Okay, so what you're saying in your mind, that there's some kind of spiritual hand behind the architect of Trumpism, who is me, and Donald Trump himself, and it's part of the destiny to bring America back again. That's more or less what you're saying, I think, correct?
A woven fabric, absolutely.
Well, I would, if I said to you, oh, well, no, I'd be lying to you. I believe so, too, by the way. I mean, the normal answer would be, oh, no, and play a humble game. But I'm not a politician. And I had an epiphany on it. I believe it's true. Because there's no other explanation for the ups and downs I've had in my radio career and moments that it was gone to have come back out of nowhere. There's no other explanation for it. So, we'll have to see. If he wins and he's good for America, this will be a good thing. But what if he doesn't win? What do we say then?
Michael, if he doesn't win, I don't know. It's
everybody knows if Miss Pantsuit wins, everyone's saying it's the end of America. It's finished. Anyone with an IQ over 80, 85 knows what she'll do to this country. The woman is a dictator. The woman has an anger and a hatred in her that pours out of her everything that she does and says. She is dividing races, sexes, classes. She will be the third term of Obama, but far more damaging than he has ever been. She'll finish off the other amendments. She'll go 1 through 5. All right, my friend. Thanks, Kevin. I want to play another piece from the White House Correspondents' Dinner by that comedian who I'd never heard of, Larry Wilmore. He's really funny. And clip two is great because he picks on the one guy who I think has done more damage in the media than anyone in the history of the media, who plays Mr. Nice Guy, but he isn't. He undermined Trump in a way that should have given him away. The little blinky Wolf Blitzer with the gray hair and the big glasses always making like he's a nice guy. He isn't. He's a deep mole. Listen to two.
Speaking of drones, how is Wolf Blitzer still on television? Ask a follow-up question. Hey, Wolf, I'm ready to project tonight's winner. Anyone that isn't watching the Situation Room? No. All right. Fine. I like Wolf. Fine. Vice President Joe Biden is here. Nice to see you, Vice President. That's great. I heard Joe's retiring, moving back to Delaware, which is good. He won't have to answer any more difficult questions like, hey, don't I know you from somewhere? But I have to say about the First Lady, it's so nice to have dinner with you. She's the epitome of grace, class, and poise. Not to be confused with future first gentleman Bill Clinton, whose three favorite strippers are named Grace, Class, and Poise. It's the late show, Mr. President. I can do these jokes. So.
I think he's really courageous, this guy. Not only were the jokes good, whoever wrote them is a genius, but the ability to stand up there and take the heat that he took. You know, this guy did some job there. But the best part was seeing the faces of evil in the audience. I wish I had the ability right now to write, and it'll take me time to write up what I saw. You have to watch the Correspondents' Dinner over and over again as the C-SPAN cameras pan through the tables to see the boys and the girls in those seats to know where I'm coming from. But it's not something I can do right now off the cuff. I'd have to write it for it to be really sarcastic. W, you're there. 1, 2, 3. Going once, going twice, going 3 times. That's a flop. That happens. You get 1 out of 5 that isn't there. Shall I take one more call at this moment? Yes, let's go to WMAL in Washington, D.C. Stephen, you've been holding. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, as far as the spirit of creativity and individualism, it seems to be under attack. And an example is, you were asking about where's the visionaries, and it's the solo inventors, and today the solo inventors are being attacked by changing the rules on patents, and it seems to me that individualism is a unique American characteristic in our culture, and it's being attacked from every corner.
Oh, is that ever true? See, I called it where are the visionaries, but you've slightly altered the question to where are the individuals, and the individualism is being crushed. That's 1,000% true, because the collective mind, or the, shall I say, the knee-jerk collective mind, as you saw at the Correspondents' Dinner, is what prevails today. Isn't that more or less what we're saying?
Right, and America was built on individualism. If you look at the history of the United States, it was the individual inventors, the solo inventors, that built this country to make it what it is today.
All right, but we do have them. They are out there. I mean, to be honest and fair to the discussion, whoever invented Facebook, and it wasn't Mark Zuckerberg, according to the reports and stories and lawsuits that I've read, they were certainly creative inventors, weren't they?
Right, right. But then, you know, you were saying the internet is that new electronic medium that's kind of unknown in many ways. And there's a great book called the...
Well, I don't want to get sidetracked, but I think you made your main point, and I thank you for talking about that on the show. The phone number here is 855-407-2822. I can't define the topic, but I'll let you define it for us by phoning. I would say it's America first rather than America last. Back in a minute.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or Swiss America. Again, let me go back to what I'm talking about. So I get depressed looking at the debased, degraded presidency and the correspondence. And I pick up a book that I have in the library. I haven't looked at it for years. I'm cleaning out a house. I see I bought it in 1994 in the Museum of Modern Art in New York, in the Guggenheim, rather. I found that. I keep the receipts. And it's Frank Lloyd Wright's, a book about Frank Lloyd Wright, the great architect. I look at the houses and the buildings that he has created that will last, whether they stand or not, the designs will live 500 years. He was 500 years ahead of his time. A visionary, a true visionary. So I ask, where are the visionaries of today? And it leads me to this question. What single phrases or lines have I or anyone else in talk radio spoken that have lasting value? Because I challenged myself. I got very depressed looking at the book. I said, look what this man has created. What have you done? I got angry at myself. I said, okay, I've written 29 books. I've done a lot of broadcasts. I've got some plant collections, but what am I really leaving behind? What is my legacy? I challenged myself, and I really didn't have an answer. So I'm going to ask you, the audience, what single phrases or lines have I, Michael Savage, or anyone else, I'm opening it up, in talk radio ever spoken that you remember that will have lasting value? I mean, we hear, you know, Thomas Paine, give me liberty or give me death, right? What have I ever said that you'll remember that you could pass on to a child? Give me one line. Because I think you will come up with something that I can't come up with. I'm counting on you right now. 855-400-SAVAGE. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
Either way, look, this show is not for everyone. I'll admit it. Maybe it's becoming increasingly so. I'll admit that as well. But I have to go where I go, and I have to develop as I develop. And I'm evolving as a talk show host. I'm kind of ever-changing, but slowly. I've been thinking long and hard about talk radio. Look, I began in 94. And talk radio at that time had been defined by two people, Howard Stern and Rush Limbaugh. And everyone has tried to copy those models, and they've been doing so ever since. And so you listen to the shows, and you hear the same thing that Stern was doing in the 80s. You know, he's there, the girl laughs at every joke, and it's the wise guy and trying to be sarcastic, but they're not. Those days are over. We don't have time for that anymore. That model has to be reinvented. It's over. It's boring. Everyone tries to, like, yeah, real wise guy in the mic. It's not funny. Most of it's not funny. We're living in desperate times. We got people in the streets who want to tear everything down that we built up. We don't have time for wisecracks. And so when you look at the correspondence, then you see these jerks sitting there who have torn America apart by not standing up to these idiots who are tearing us down. And that's why I say I have to go and be true to myself in whatever I do for however long I am writing or speaking. And I'm asking you to help me figure this out. I asked, is there an enduring legacy of any kind of talk radio to begin with? It's an ethereal medium. I began as a writer, and I always wanted to be a writer for a number of reasons. I always felt the fleeting nature of time. I always knew time was so short. I always knew a man came and went and no one remembered him. I just knew that. I felt it as a child, the fleeting nature of it. And the only thing that stuck in my mind, from my point of view, that was lasting was the printed word. Now, I realize things have changed since I was a little boy. If I ever told you the story of Destiny's hand, you won't believe it. You'll think he's making it up. But look, I'm not making it up. That's a time for another story, another time. I can't get into it. I can't phrase the story properly to fit into this section right now. So I always wanted to be a writer. I thought it would be an enduring legacy. It's genetically encoded in me being a writer, by the way. I am genetically encoded to be a writer, probably as an orator. I was probably ancestrally some type. If you look into that, you want to believe this, want to get into this stuff, because I almost dare not go where I'm about to go. I believe in reincarnation, personally. Can I prove it? Of course not, because I'm not God. You'll have to find that out for yourself. But we're living in such a cynical age that people don't believe in anything. Don't believe in anything, nothing. Certainly don't believe in reincarnation. They think that we're such materialistic entities that when the material itself ceases functioning, the entity known as man ceases functioning. I had an acquaintance who was a neurologist who said to me, "Do you believe in God?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, I don't." I said, "Okay." He said, "I've seen people die." And he said, "I know that when the brain stops working, there's nothing there. It's over." He said, "Well, why do you believe in God?" I gave him my answer. I don't want to give you a whole sales pitch on God right now. But the point I'm making is I believe in reincarnation. I believe that we've lived many lives. Not all of us, by the way. Some of us have not even lived the life that we're living right now. Some of us are just going through the paces. And I don't have to put people down who are just not evolved, but there are people who, this is their first shot at being a human being. I guess I'm getting into the whole 0001% right now, almost sitting in a seminar in another world with Aldous Huxley and living in a Brave New World by myself. But let's make believe you're in that seminar with me for that minute. I myself believe in reincarnation. I, Michael Savage, believe there have been many lives before mine and that I was put here for a destiny and that I believe that I have certain talents that were encoded in me for specific reasons from my ancestors. One is the voice and the speaking. And probably in another time I would have been a singer in a religious setting, possibly. Or I would have been I don't know how to put it, I don't want to use the wrong word, a priest in a setting, because I do get preachy. I've been known to get very preachy. But God leavened that in me with some humor. He made me a bit of a jokester as a kid, because I didn't want to be too overbearing. Sometimes I can be overbearing to myself and others. So he gave me that sense of mirth and humor. And I know that. And I know that there were impediments put in my way in radio from the get-go that should have stopped my career right at the beginning. When I was a local host, things were done to me at that station by people who hated my politics. They tried to make sure that I tripped up. It happened in the station. It happened in the elevator. It happened in the doorway. And lo and behold, I kept going and going and going and one thing and the other, da-da-da, so here I am. Now, what tomorrow will bring, I don't know. I don't know. Things are changing. I said that to you. And these changes, these winds of change, are affecting my thinking and affecting my show in this way. That's why I'm willing to take the chance of talking about what single phrases or lines have I, Michael Savage, or anyone else in the radio world spoken that will have lasting value along the lines of a Frank Lloyd Wright design. How do you like that? It's a really simple question, but it's not a simple answer. But I'll take some calls on that, because it's all I'm interested in today. I'm not interested in anything else. So let's take a caller or two. Desmond on KSFO, what's your answer? Please go ahead.
Yes, your legacy is three simple words: borders, language, culture. What else is
there? I don't think anyone else has ever defined what a nation is defined by in simpler terms than those three words, ever. I searched for the answer. And I agree with you. I would say that those three words are it. I mean, there are other things I've said, such as liberalism is a mental disorder. That's a pretty good one. But I don't think that will travel as far as borders, language, and culture in defining a nation. All right, Desmond, I'm sending you, I'll tell you, I'll give everyone who gets on the air now, since we're in the Teddy era, a copy of Teddy and Me, Confessions of a Service Human. It's a beautiful book that should lighten the load a little bit. And maybe today, tomorrow, I'll get to reading some of the writing in here, because there's 10,000 really good words in here that I'd like to read to you. That's a good one. Borders, Language, Culture. I remember the day I wrote it. I had just started radio, 1994, KSFO, San Francisco. My world had changed for the better. It was a daily struggle, but I was never as excited mentally as I was never as mentally challenged or excited in my whole life. I finally found what I've been looking for all my life. I remember when I was a writer per se, in 81, 82, I had written a book called about the immune system called Maximum Immunity. And the very, very distinguished old-line publisher, Houghton Mifflin, was publishing it. I was so honored because that was such a big name, right? So I went to Boston, as you would do as a young writer. It was so thrilling to be invited to a seafood restaurant in Boston with the editor. She was a very dignified Bostonian and was sitting at lunch. I remember it to this day, certain things you remember. And she said to me, you know, Michael, you're a really good writer, but she said your future. She said your destiny is in some other area like radio. I said, well, why would you say that? I don't. She said, because books are too slow for you. She said it takes you a year to conceive of it, a year to write it. And by the time it's out, you're on to 15 other ideas. So I said, well, okay, great. How am I going to get into radio? How do you get into radio from being a writer? Oh, I'd go on book tours, 10-city book tours, grueling. And every time I went to the big stations, and I particularly remember going to KIRO in Seattle. I'm not even on the station now. There were some great old-time broadcasters in those days. In those days, radio broadcasters were still considered, they were considered movie stars. And you'd walk in the hallway of these great stations around America, and there'd be these huge pictures of the main hosts, the day part hosts. No one else was shown. And they were like the movie stars of the radio business. And I remember I'd go on the show, and they ask about the book. I think it was way back when. They'd say, you know, you're really good on radio. You've got a great voice. You ought to consider a career in radio. And I would say, how do I become a radio host? How do I go from this to that? They may as well have said to me, you know what? You would be a good astronaut. Because I didn't know how to become a radio host. How could you become a radio host? You couldn't. How do you just become one? Well, anyway, destiny had it so that I became a radio host. And here I am many years later. And I would say that the hourglass is not half full. I'd say the hourglass of my radio career is more sand on the bottom than on the top. Let's put it to you that way. It's not a panic attack thing. I'm just talking reality to you. But what single phrases or lines have I or anyone else in talk radio, including others, spoken that have any lasting value? And again, I'm going back to architecture, such as that of Frank Lloyd Wright, which have not only lasting value, but he was 500 years ahead of his time. You look at some of his designs. You say, God, how does he have a mind like that? So as I look at his drawings and sketches for the buildings he was going to create, I say, what world was he from? I try to ask myself, were men like him, or Beethoven, for example, Mozart, pick your favorite composer, what world are they really living in? What kind of minds do they have? Do they get dyspepsia? Do they get headaches? Do they suffer from various inflammations? Did they have anxiety? Did they fear death? What motivated them? How could they keep going? Were they from another planet? Were they extraterrestrials? You have to look at minds like this and ask yourself, how could they be human? Especially when you compare them with what is paraded as special today in America. Let me just let that hang in the air. Especially when you compare these greats with what is paraded as extra special in the American media today. And so I challenge myself every day to try and do something worthwhile and something better. And that's why I'm doing this today. I know exactly how I would get where I am today, but I had to thread this needle very, very carefully to where I am right now. It has taken me 1 hour and 45 minutes to reach the point I wanted to reach with you, my audience, on the Savage Nation. KVOR, Colorado. Mary, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi. The line that I remember is, if I'm not for myself, who will be?
Yes, but that's not from me. That's from a Jewish writer in the 11th century. I believe it was written by a Jewish writer by the name, a great scholar by the name of Rambam, Maimonides, who wrote, if I'm not for myself, who will be? If I'm only for myself, who am I? See, I learned that in the writings, but I didn't write that. But I learned from that, and I think that you should know the origin of it, because I have no intention of taking something that I didn't create as my own. Well, here's an example of a man who wrote that in the 1100s, and look how long that's lasted, 1,000 years. So words can last a very long time, Mary. You see what I mean?
Yes, but you introduced them to people, so that's very important to me.
All right, so I've popularized some ancient wisdom in that regard, but I'm talking about what I originally created. I'm sending you a copy of Teddy and Me coming out next week in the bookstores. 855-407-2822. Let's take another couple of great calls on the program. And we'll look for these answers here. A little bit on, a little bit off. WJR, Detroit, Taylor, line one. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. I've been listening to you since you were on San Francisco in 94. I used to live in the Bay Area. And the line that's captivated me for all these years is the government media complex. I thought that was such a prescient saying. It just cracked me up. And it's been very inspiring, and it actually inspired me to make an assemblage, an oil painting called the Government Media Complex, and it's actually pissed off quite a few liberals.
Can I get a copy to put? Can you send a photograph to put on my website so people can learn about you and your art? I don't want anything out of it. I'm not looking to buy or sell. I'm looking to, let's say, broadcast what you've done. So stay on the line, Taylor. Now, where that came from, stay in the line, Taylor. I want that on my website. Let's put the picture up. Okay, government media complex. Where'd that come from? It was very simple. Remember the phrase, the military-industrial complex? Remember that was so popular? Eisenhower, president many years ago, 50s. He was a former general of NATO. He led the war against Hitler on D-Day. And then he became president, and I've said to you before, he was a moderate Republican. He was not a conservative Republican, per se. He was a moderate Republican. And remember I said that Trump will be closer to him in model than anyone else? People said that was brilliant. How'd you figure that out? I said, well, I just figured it out. Trump will wind up being more like Eisenhower than Barry Goldwater, who was my real hero. Goldwater was my real hero. But nevertheless, let's move on. So he said, when he saw the amount of people who were making money in war, Eisenhower, former general, he said, beware the military-industrial complex. So I thought a lot about that. And I said, the real problem today is not so much the military-industrial complex, but the government media complex. And in 1998, I was invited to give a speech before the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco that would never happen again today, never a million years. I gave this speech that went over everyone's head. C-SPAN refused to cover it. They only cover things... Well, whatever, let it go at that. It's a great speech, and I have a copy of it. And the speech was entitled, Beware the Government Media Complex. It was about Bill Clinton and his cozy relationship with Wolfie and the boys and girls.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth and financial future. Call 1-800-289-2646. So, many of you leave the show after 2 hours, many of you stay, and in the next hour, I'll tell you who I think are visionaries today. I'll ask you again about single phrases or lines that I or anyone else in talk radio has spoken that have lasting value. And I'm gonna move it to another topic. I noticed that the president's daughter, Malia, is not going on to Harvard. She's taking a so-called gap year. And I wanted to ask you what you think about that. What do you mean a gap year? Was she going to go to work for a year or just hang around during that year? Now, I know she's just like everyone else. I mean, she went to Friends Academy, which costs about $50,000 a year. That's how much he is a man of the people. The children go to the best of schools because you can say one thing and do another in America, especially when you have what you have in the White House Correspondents' Dinner sitting in the audience. You'll get away with it unless you're, let us say, a different personality than Barack Obama. But if Malia Obama is taking a gap year, what shall I say to you? What is a gap year? I never heard of it till now. It's a new phrase, gap year, gap year, gap year. And now suddenly that's going to become popular. So get ready to have your child, who you finally thought was going to leave the nest, to stay home a year because, well, Malia Obama's taking a gap year, so I'm going to stay home for a year. And I'm going to collect myself. I'm going to do yoga. Imagine that, if you hear that your daughter's not, she's been accepted, let's say, to college. But she's not going to go away. She's going to stay home for a gap year. Can you imagine having her or him around for another year in your house just when you thought you were home free all? You put the money away for them to go to college. You're ready to take a little vacation, you and your husband, and now you're going to get a gap year child staying at home? How's that going to work for you? What's the gap year? Is it a good idea or a terrible idea? Well, I think it's a horrible idea for spoiled brats, in my own opinion. Back in a minute.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Welcome to the third and final hour this Monday. And for me to try to summarize the show in one or two phrases, I think would be an insult to the first 2 hours. So I'll let the callers do it for you if you just join the show. One of the ideas, I hate people say ideas. I think President Bush used to say ideas. I judge people on one or two words. That's one of them. Anyone who says those ideas are good, I don't talk to ever again. And we had him for 8 years as president. You can just imagine. But I ask, is there an enduring legacy of any kind in talk radio, in the spoken word? And then I ask you, who are the visionaries of today? And I didn't give you the names. I can think of two visionaries. Elon Musk and Richard Branson would be visionaries. Space travel, futuristic travel, that's quite visionary, isn't it? I mean, there are others. Are there any other visionaries you can think of other than these people? And getting back to radio, what single lines or phrases have I, Michael Savage, or anyone else for that matter in talk radio, ever said that have any lasting value? I like these topics. They're a little off the beaten path, but I like the topics, and I hope you do as well, because in addition to that, I brought up the issue of the gap year. The gap year. Because now that old Mr. Obama's daughter, Malia, is not going to go to Harvard. After all, she had all these hard years at the Friends Academy, was tuition $50,000 a year. So she could be like all the other poor children of Washington, D.C. She's going to take a gap year. Now, I don't know where this comes from, but to me, I don't know what the gap year is for. What do you mean a gap year? That's if you're lazy and you have parents with money, you take a gap year. Does that strengthen a child or weaken a child to take a gap year? I personally think that we have far too many holidays and vacations and teachers' days and this day and that day and that day and this. I see kids running around in the streets who should be learning. In Japan, they go to school 300 days a year or more, 360 days a year for that matter. What's every year? The whole summer they take off in American schools like with farmers. And the kids have to take off in the heat because it's too hot for them to pick the corn. What nonsense. We should have school 11 and a half months a year with 2 weeks vacation. Let the kids get ready for a real job. That's all. We have to work. Not everyone wants to get up in the morning when an alarm clock rings. You don't want to get up. Nice under those covers, isn't it? Nice, warm cover. Pillow feels good. You don't want to get up and take a shower and gag on food and run to catch some kind of public transportation or drive to work, do you? But you do it. I did it for years. I hated it. I would rather have stayed under the covers like 35% of Americans who receive a government check and scam the rest of the money. And then scream about the rich and hate them. It'd be nice to have a government that takes care of you like that. Till eventually it all comes crashing down because of the unsupportable debt that your great president has run up. One day it'll all come crashing down on who you're going to blame. Certainly not him. He's the untouchable. He has done no wrong. But let's go to the topics at hand. And those are the topics that I had mentioned. Dan on WMAL, Line 8, you're on the Savage Nation. What's your topic?
Thank you. I want to talk about the gap year. My wife and I lived in England for a couple of years, and it's a very common practice in England for students after high school, or equivalent to high school graduation, to go on the gap year. If they're not ready for college or if they have something planned, it's kind of like a Job Corps type of a program where they can go to
Excuse me. How has that worked out for the English society as a whole? So last I checked, it was a pretty debased society and very unproductive at that. It has a very low productivity level.
Well, that's true. I mean, it's a very left-leaning country, but it's a...
Yeah, in other words, the gap year is part of the welfare state. as though you have wealthy parents or a wealthy government that will let you explore yourself. You know, just explore to see what you really might want to do. That whole theory, while the rest of the people are toiling. So, look, I get it's European, but how has that worked out for Europe, which is now being overrun by illegal aliens, which are dissolving their culture, amongst other things?
Well, of course it's common
in Europe. So that means, I love that they use that as a model, because Malia Obama is taking a gap year, now we're going to hear about Europe. Suddenly you're supposed to look to Europe for our future America. I'm sorry, I don't think that the gap year is very good for the child. It teaches them if you want to take a year off anytime you want, just leave your job. That's all. Gets too hard, take a gap year. WABC, oh, do I have a winner here. Jim on line two, go ahead, fire away.
Yes, Dr. Savage. The phrase that resonates most with me is the term red diaper doper baby, and I think it's an appropriate with the discussion we're having about...
I love it. That is mine. I did create it. It came from a well-established phrase called a red diaper baby. And for those of you who don't know what that is, those were the children in America raised in the 1940s and 50s, and the 60s for that matter, who were raised by communist parents, mainly in Brooklyn and Queens, New York, Upper West Side as well, and other denizens like Madison, Wisconsin, and places like that, San Francisco. And the children were raised as red diaper babies by parents who were communists, or in these days we call communist progressives. And they steeped the child in the rhetoric of Marxism. The child was raised as a communist, sent to camps that were known as communist indoctrination camps in various parts of America. It's all true. Well, then you added another toxic element to the red diaper baby, which was the dope, and you have the red diaper doper baby, which is my original creation. I think that's an old one going back to the 90s, right, Jim?
That's right. Yes, it was in the 90s, late 90s.
So yep. You've listened to this show on what station in those days, because you're in New York now?
Was ABC. It was WOR before ABC. And
you know that I was on WABC in New York City before I was on OR, and then I went to OR, and then they switched over to another owner. Then I went back to WABC. I've actually been on and off in New York for many years.
Yeah, that's right. They bounced you back and forth. That's right.
Yeah, well, I don't know where the bouncy ball will go next. But, Jim, let me send you a copy of, do you want Government Zero or Teddy and Me?
Government Zero.
See, people still want that political book. All right, you got Government Zero on the way. 855-400-728. Oh, I got to tell you something, I forgot. So Friday night, I went somewhere, and then I went into another place in San Francisco, down to North Beach. And I went, normally I go to Pinocchio Restaurant with my friend Giovanni owns it. I like him a lot. The food is great. He's a great guy. Him and Maria, wonderful people. Across the street, there's a restaurant called U.S. Restaurant. I really shouldn't tell you about these places because I don't want you to bother me there. And I want to be able to get into these places. That place has been around North Beach forever, but they moved locations. Well, I've been going a few times. I think it's the greatest food in North Beach right now, really authentic food. And in the back of the restaurant while I'm eating, there's a guy I thought I recognized, and I kept, no. So he said, no. And he came over. He said, no, I'm Nick the Fisherman. So we had a long talk. Oh, you should see this picture of me and Nick the Fisherman. Nick is a fisherman down in the area. He brings in these 300-pound fish to the restaurant. He gets the fresh calamari. You got to hear these. You know, and I talked to these guys, the owner and Nick, for about 20 minutes. And then we took a picture, the three of us. I dare not put it on the Internet. Because I don't know that they want to be embarrassed to be seen with me. But, you know, they talked about what it is to be a restaurant owner in San Francisco going back 30, 40 years. What it is to be a fisherman who actually fishes the waters. And I realized I am more comfortable talking with immigrants than I am talking with other people. And it told me an awful lot about myself. I come from an immigrant background, where all of the men around my father were immigrants to this country. And there was a certain life to them, a certain masculinity and life and strength, a joy, if it were, just a life force is really what I'm looking for, that is unique. Let's put it to you that way, without comparing. I don't have to, you know, comparisons have their limitations. The life force, the gesticulations, the movement, the interaction, you know. And I really enjoyed it very much, and I said, I have to talk about speaking to the fishermen who, you know, ran one of the big, he has the biggest fishing boat still on San Francisco Bay. And I think he said he goes back fishing to the old days of Sicily before he came over here. And then he said to me, well, one day I'll take you out on my boat. I said, no, thank you. I'm not looking for, you know, the perfect storm. I said, I don't need a 60-foot wave to prove anything at this point. I said, you know, I had a 62-foot Grand Banks that I used to take out under the gate on my own sometime. And I said, I once got hit by a following sea, and luckily I was able to ride, you know, sail that wave. I sold the boat 2 years ago, by the way. I'm not even a boater anymore. Would you believe it? But no, I don't really want to go out. He said, no, he says, I don't go out there anymore. I have guys on my fishing boats. So that's, you know, the old man in the sea. Just a beautiful little moment. I can't even put my finger on what I'm saying to you. The ethereal nature of a conversation. And how it can uplift you. I guess that's what I'm getting at. You know, looking for inspiration today? Conversation can lift a man up. Speaking to people, that's real. Really, reality. You get into a real conversation with a person who's really talking to you and not trying to get over on you or con you. And you get into a human conversation with people, and I'll tell you something, it lifts your spirits. And I guess that's what I'm getting at. In this automated world of BS, where everyone's throwing you a line in malarkey and trying to sell you something or get over on you, it's very hard to have a conversation at all when everyone's on the make in some way or trying to run you down in some way. So that's why I tend to like to talk to immigrants, to be honest with you. Back in a minute.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN. I just say it to the guys I work with, you know, I see them, Jim and Robert in Dallas on my Skype screen. Robert runs the board and Jim runs the calls. And here I am in San Francisco and they're in Dallas and we talk every day on television in essence through Skype, which is amazing. It's like having them here. And it's like them having me having being there with them. But then we just say goodbye and turn it off and we're gone. Can't even buy each other a beer. And they know that sometimes hour three is really hard for people in radio, no matter what they're telling you. You can hear it in people's voices. They run out of ideas. They get exhausted. I said, I'm not tired today. I said, it took me an hour and a half to get where I wanted to go in the show because it was a whole different area and I didn't know how to exactly cut my way through that jungle. And then I said, about an hour 30, I felt it, a clearing open. And I said, right now I feel like Popeye. I feel like I'm full of energy. And it wasn't from eating spinach. I think it's from expressing ideas so clearly. I feel like the flow is really good right now. So that's why I want to go back and to continue with this particular conversation. Here's another good one. And we're collecting them all in one. These are amazing. Here's one that I said that I forgot about. Richard, line 7 from KERN Country. Kern is a big station down near the California, Southern California. It's right in an area at the bottom of the farm country. And there's an area called the Grapevine where the highway starts to climb up into the mountain just before L.A. That's why I love Kern. I always remember it. I hear it when I'm taking that long drive to L.A. So, again, Richard from Kern, KERN Radio, line 7. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. The stench from the bench is making me cleanse.
I forgot that one. I created that one in 95 when Felton Henderson, one of the worst people in the history of the world, the former lawyer for the ACLU, was made into a federal judge by the evil ones in this state, and he stole the vote of 6 million Californians who said no to illegal aliens, health care, and education. It was Prop 187. He stole it with the stroke of a pen. And do you know that that bum is still around doing damage behind the scenes? Do you know that? Do you know how damaging these anti-Americans are? And that's when I came up with the stench from the bench is making me clench. That's a good one.
I hope that made your day, sir. I remember my mother and I being down there at 450 Golden Gate when you were there in a drizzling rain with your bodyguards. Can I take you down memory lane for a moment?
Go ahead. By the way, I showed up in an armored car. I remember KSL rented an armored car for me for that appearance. Yes, please, let's go down memory lane together.
I believe it was your last public appearance when you appeared at the Concord Pavilion and you
yes.
sat on stage in a white suit. And at the end of the show, you drove across the stage in a red Cadillac convertible and waved to the audience.
Yep. And that car is long gone. I sold it a few years ago to some gentleman, I think in Alaska, I don't know where, Alaska, Wisconsin.
That
that?
Yep, I drove that car on stage, and the stagehands were all liberals, damaged the car by smashing it into a post for me. That's how much they love me. Really nice people down there in the unions.
Right. You came back to the podium, and a guy was standing just below the podium, and he'd been up all night working two jobs, and he was pretty greasy and tired, and he knew if he went home to clean up, he was going to miss your show, and he didn't want to miss your show. So he showed up greasy and tired and with a military jacket on, and this was before you went national. And he looked up at you and he said, "Mike, you got to go national. America needs to hear your message." Do you remember that?
I don't. Absolutely draw a blank on that one.
I'm sorry.
That show was in at the Concord Pavilion, 7,000 people. It outdrew Sheryl Crow. People don't know the star power that this show really has. If I really wanted to go out on the road. This was before the Tea Party people were flocking to these compassionate conservative conventions. But that was put on, I remember, by the radio station. And that was a heck of an event. It was well produced. I'm trying to think of the year. It was like Teddy was a baby. He was black. I had him. He'd just been a puppy, so he was black. I have a picture of him. It's 11, 12 years ago. 12 years ago, I was already a national host because I went national in the year 2000. So I don't know that occurred at that. If you remember it, it did. But I was already a national host at that point.
Yeah, well,
I was local from 94 to 2000. 2000, I became syndicated, and that event had to be in 2000. And what are we saying here? Like 12 years ago?
CFO at the time.
Yeah, 04, 05, something like that. Well, thanks for calling. You live down in the area that I mentioned near the Grapevine. Where do you live?
No, I live in Oakland now.
But it says you're calling from KERN. Are you picking it up on the stream? Is that it?
Essentially, yeah.
Okay, I got it. Whatever, it's a short wave through a filling that you get through the cloud. It comes from KERN via short wave to a cloud, then it comes down into your tooth, and you get it through the gold filling. I'm sending you a copy of Teddy and Me because I want you to have it. Okay, when I come back, more calls on all of these topics, not only by legacy statements. I like that, legacy statements. And we're collecting them all into one bunch. We're going to have one soundbite after this show. If you want to be part of radio history, Robert's writing them down and Doug will record them. We're going to put them all in one, all of the great sayings of the Savage Nation in one bite. It's going to be one bite. Can't be that long. These are one-liners. We're not going to play the whole interchange. It's going to be the one line, okay? If you want to make radio history, back in a minute.
Savage.
CNN ORC poll, GOP voters say Cruz should drop out. No? See, was I wrong? Everyone's saying the same thing except the diehards. CNN ORC poll, GOP voters say Cruz should drop out of the presidential race if he cannot win the 1,237 delegates needed to secure the nomination. Everyone knows he can't win. And they say the reason he's staying in is as a spoiler, but it's for the money and for the fame. It has nothing to do with America. The longer he stays in and is in the public eye, the higher his advance goes on his book and the higher his speaking fees become. Moreover, the tens of millions of dollars that he's raking in, what do you think, that disappears and they give it back? They don't give it back. They can't spend it on themselves, but think about all the money that is being donated to these candidates and where it goes if they stop running. They spend it on, nepotism and this and that. And if he was really that concerned about the well-being of the USA and stopping Hillary Clinton, he wouldn't be trying to disrupt Donald Trump at this point. Maybe there was a time for it a month ago or 2 months ago, but not now. And I know the counter-argument that Trump is part of the liberal political elite and that we have to stop them and therefore blah, blah, blah. So have it any way you want. Any way you want. But the only way to have it is the right way, which is to defeat Hillary Clinton. WGAW in Massachusetts. Thomas, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Yes, on one of your many topics of health, you touched on your paternal lineage and the short lifespan of your father and his father before him. And you didn't expect to live this long, and you credited your long life to the three Vs, which you said were vitamins, vodka, and vitriol.
Stop. I forgot that one. That's hilarious. You see, people remember everything you say in radio. That's embarrassing. It's funny, though.
This was a health topic about a year ago. And right about that time, too, And that same time period, another line you gave, you were wanting something heavy for music, and poor Robert or Jim, whoever's in charge of the music, was getting it from you. And you went on a rant about how music used to be called heavy metal, and today now it's aluminum.
It's a little bit of metal, right? That's funny. No, but the three V's are a very funny one. Vitamins, vodka, and vitriol. Well, I still do mega doses of vitamins. I'm still full of vitriol, although I try my best not to be. But I don't drink much vodka anymore. I can't stand it. I just try to avoid it. It's poison for your body, to be honest with you. It's a poisonous substance. I mean, it's not that good for your health at the end of the day to drink a lot of vodka. But you do remember the three V's. It's something that may not live for 500 years, but it certainly lived until today. All right, my friend, I'm sending you a copy of Teddy and Me or Government Zero.
I'll take Teddy and Me.
Isn't that nice of you? Thank God somebody wants the book. It's a sweet book. I got to read something from it, but not now. I'm not going to read now. There's 10,000 words in here that are worth reading. And I don't know why. Not now. Maybe another day. I read one thing. The great picture of me with a clicker on a couch with Teddy next to me. Our favorite pastime. What could be better? The clicker and Ted. These pictures are awesome. I got to get them up on the internet so people can see how fun these pictures were taken by Vince Romini. My favorite, though, is me in bed at night with pajamas with a shotgun, a loaded shotgun on the bed. I have a newspaper in front of me, and I'm reading the paper, and Teddy's next to me on a pillow, and he's staring very, very suspiciously at the loaded shotgun. There it is, locked and loaded, ready for bed. It's the centerfold picture on page 59. The book will be out next week. It won't be in the bookstores till next Tuesday, so I'm holding my fire. But I can't wait till you actually go and see it, because I think once you do see it, you're going to love it. But if you see Teddy staring at that loaded shotgun and me reading the newspaper, the only part of this picture I don't like is the way I look somewhat Hemingway-like. And any association between me and Hemingway with a shotgun, a loaded shotgun, is not good. That didn't end very well for my hero. I didn't like how that one ended. He was my hero of heroes. I just didn't like the way that one ended. That was a horrible one. His father committed suicide, then he committed suicide. Jeez. Sometimes you have to be thankful for a heart attack, you know, when you think about it. Anyway, let's not get morbid. That's my calling card, is morbidity. Morbidity, morbidity, morbid. What's wrong with being morbid? I don't know why people should be afraid of being morbid. It's a part of life. Was everything's going to be Disneyland and a cheerful thing with an antidepressant? What, are you supposed to walk around happy like a balloon with a face painted on it? Ah, whatever. Now, let's go to the next caller. Jerry, KSFO Online, line two. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael. Thanks for taking my call. The saying was, as Jews and Christians, we both belong to the same corporation but different divisions.
Yes, it's not mine. That came to me from my friend, the deceased restaurant owner, Lorenzo Petroni, God rest his soul. Great Italian guy, built like a barrel chested, as strong as an oak tree. And he used to say to me, Michael, same a corporation, a different a division. And he and I would sit and have some drinks together. He would drink wine and I would drink a light beer at the time. Yeah, he was great. He was great. You know, I got two friends now. He died, cancer, terrible struggle. He fought it like terrible, terrible. These guys I knew. Another guy I know built like him, strong as iron, fighting cancer for years. They don't go easy, these guys. They fight like old world warriors. I've never seen anything like it. They won't give in. And they suffer from that chemo, and they won't let it kill them. The chemo's worse than the cancer, by the way, what it does to these men. What are you going to do? You take the best shot you can. You want to believe in, you know, that you have a chance, and the doctors always tell you, the doctors don't mean anything by it. They're trying to save you, but they know that the odds are low, but people don't want to just roll over and die. But what they go through in these rounds of chemo, and then they come back and they think that it's gone, and they tell you it's eradicated, and you know, I mean, I bit my tongue because I saw it with someone in the family, too, already. You know, oh, he got it beat, it's gone, the doctor says there are no cells left. I know what's coming because it's inevitable. And then they all know what's coming. What are you going to do? Just give up? So you take your best shot and you go for the chemo, and you suffer like you never suffered in your life. It rips your guts out. It rips your hair out. It rips your dignity out. And you hope you're going to hang on for another couple of years. What are you going to do? How's that for more? No, because the truth is everyone listening to the show, no matter how young, no one thinks about these things. And no one wants to think about it. Everyone says, who wants to get depressed? Everyone thinks that they're going to live forever. Nah, I'm not going to. That's not me. When you're like 20, I don't be stupid. That's not going to affect me. It's so long in the future. Why do I have to think about it? You know, I don't want to hear about it. Let me turn on something stupid. I don't want to think about these things. But then the guys that do think about it say, you know what? I'm so strong, or I take the vitamins and I run and I bicycle. I'm going to live to a ripe old age, and I'm just going to pass quietly, peacefully. Unfortunately, that is not true. The largest part of humanity listening to this show knows it is not true. The largest part of humanity should know that they should visit a nursing home and see how the elderly are treated and how they go out. It is not very pretty. In fact, wait a minute, hold it. This is leading up to something. Oh, where is this? Doug sent it to me. I can't believe it. I have another producer up in Oregon, Doug Lynn. Great guy, known for years. So, Doug is of Korean heritage. So he said his grandmother, at 101 on her birthday, he said, here it is. My great-grandmother pulled me aside and told me, remember, this is how God rewards us. He said it to me Saturday. He said, remember, this is how God rewards you for trying to live your life correctly and living a long, full life, losing your mind and having to live out your remaining years in a nursing home and dying alone. I said, great. No wonder you're a cynic, Doug. Well, we had a good laugh on that one. Jerry, stay in the line. I'm sending you Teddy and me because I don't want to depress anybody anymore. No, it's true. So I was saying, Doug, you know, look at the reward. As you get older, you realize that there's no payoff in a way. I mean, that's another show I should do another day. You keep your nose clean. You fight your impulses the best you can. You take your vitamins. You get your 8 hours of sleep. You drink your 6 glasses of water. You do your push-ups. You go to the dentist twice a year. You get your shots. And then what? So you live a long life. And then what's the great reward waiting for you? Well, what's waiting for you in your later years? Everything starts to fall off your body like a 1957 Ford. The pieces start falling off on the highway like a 58 Jaguar. At 101 on her birthday, my great-grandmother pulled me aside and told me, remember, Doug, this is how God rewards you for trying to live your life correctly and living a long, full life. You lose your mind, you have to live out your remaining years in a nursing home and die alone. That's nice. That's what I call a great legacy to give a grandchild. That's terrific. That's very nice, very inspiring. But, you know, cynicism has its rewards. That's it. That's the whole truth. B.O.B. Radio in Jacksonville, Florida. Elizabeth, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hello, sir. I was calling because you had asked what we think your most, like, profound statement was. And then I'm not sure if someone else said it previously, so I had to walk away. But I think that your best statement is that liberalism is a mental disorder.
Yeah, that's a good one. But the question is, will it live 100 years? Now, the answer is, if America should elect a nationalist of any kind like Donald Trump, we have a chance. If, on the other hand, an actual communist wins, progressive, communist, socialist, define it any way you want, they will rewrite history and they will purge the literature of any statement such as that, and it will not even be heard again. It will be considered hate speech, and they will burn the books, they'll burn the idea, they will take it off the internet. Do you know that? They're doing it in Europe already. It's known as hurtful speech. Canada bans it. Europe bans it. They've moved already into communism. I hope you understand the danger we're in with Hillary Clinton. Elizabeth, I'm sending you Teddy and Me because it's such a beautiful book. I'll be back in a minute on The Savage Nation.
Join The Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Your Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust for tangible assets, gold and silver. Call 800-BUICOIN. God, had I only known what was waiting. Oh, welcome back to The Savage Nation. You don't know. If kids knew what was waiting for them, do you think they'd take another step? I had some more people are hanging on the line for the best lines of the Savage Nation over the years, and we're putting it together in one single soundbite for tomorrow. I think we're going to open the show with this one, some of the best sounds. This one I forgot, too. KSFO Online, Marty, go ahead, fire away. 30 seconds or less, a savagism that you remember.
Look, two of my favorites. Justice Kagan, referring to the Second Amendment, in her best Brooklyn accent, as Settled Lore.
It's Settled Lore.
And number two, when women were straight and the chrome was thick.
How did I get away with that one? That's funny. The Savage Nation, when the women were straight and the chrome was thick. What's wrong with that saying? Everyone had a mother, didn't they? Even the most flaming leftist feminist today must remember she had a mother, right, and a grandmother. Why would they take offense at that? When the women were straight and the chrome was thick, that's a great line. Okay, my friend, you got a copy of Teddy coming out to you, Teddy and me. I'm only giving out Teddy's today. Next one, we have so little time. KSFO, Petri, line two, fire away. What's the line you remember?
They're all great, but one of them that sticks, and I've repeated to some of my calls to you, is the sewer pipe of Hollywood.
The sewer pipe of Hollywood. That's a heck of a story. That would make it for a good movie. Do you think Weinstein can get it produced?
Yeah, you know, it'll be one of those B-film, like Friday the 13th, the horror movie.
Wait, yeah. But you think I would have a chance if I wrote a screenplay on spec called The Sewer Pipe of Hollywood, do you think?
Yes.
Do you think Katzenberg, Matzenberg, Ratzenberg, and Spielberg would produce it?
No, we got to get George Romero. George Romero, Night of the Living Dead. You know, we got to get some of the... Oh, wait, listen to this. Quentin Tarantino, that's sarcasm.
All right, no, he would do a great version of The Sewer Pipe of Hollywood, except he'd have to be the first piece of offal in the sewer pipe of Hollywood. All right, you got a copy of Teddy and Me coming out. Stay on the line. We're firing away. Here's a good one. Kevin calling on the internet. Kevin, what do you remember? Go ahead, please.
Oh, Savage, your best line ever, I think. And I don't know if we're going to be able to have a laugh about it because it is so serious. You said the Fourth Estate has become the fifth column.
Oh, it's unbelievable. It's actually brilliant. That's my most brilliant remark of all. But the problem with that one is anyone can understand when the women were straight and the chrome was thick. But if you say to people the Fourth Estate has become the fifth column, it requires knowledge of what the Fourth Estate is and what the fifth column was. Unfortunately requires translation, but it's a heck of a line. It is a good one. It's quite original, too. So for that brilliant reminder, you get a copy of Teddy and Me, which I'm sure you'll love. This is funny. I forgot half these lines. Tomorrow we're going to have a great opening. I'm looking forward to this one. So let's see if we have another one that I can find here that'll be funny. Marie on KBOI Radio in Idaho. KBOI, what's on your mind, Mary? Go ahead, please.
Hello. Yeah, one of my favorites is when you would say, clean them up, lock them up, lock them up, clean them up, referring to the bums.
Oh, the bums, the nice, you mean the revered untouchables of San Francisco. Those that reflect San Francisco values because, okay, we'll leave it at that. Thank you. A copy of Teddy and Me goes out to you. Now let's go to the next caller. Oh, he's a good one. Michael on KSFO, line 5. What do you remember? Go ahead, please.
Hi, Mr. Savage, sir. Me, immigrant, I sue ACLU.
I remember in the early 90s, I was saying the ACLU was standing at the border with little cards in Spanish and English. And the translation was, if anyone stops you, say to them, me, immigrant, I sue ACLU with an 800 number. Yes, I do remember that. Was that prophetic or what?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was. From day one, I've been listening to you. And
well, I have a dream. You know, I have a real dream that Donald Trump wins. Oh, do I have a dream. I have a dream that when Donald Trump wins, the new Justice Department goes after the ACLU. I have a dream that all the Marvins and the Glorias and all their ill-gotten gains will be seized by the government. And they'll either run for the hills or be thrown in the slammer. I have a dream that when Donald Trump becomes president, George Soros finds there's not a country on earth that he can hide in because he is hated around the world for what he has done to every currency on the planet. I have a dream. Yeah, don't get me started because the show is over. Well, thanks for being with me today. This is Popeye Savage saying goodnight and God bless America.